Just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about diving, depths, worlds that are arid, death, birth, life, patriarchy, existentialism, abortion, religion, mythology. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, maybe just skip these next few episodes. He's the pain of birth, lighter born in the pain of death. I'd say that I loved you first, but I love you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. My name is Sam.
My name is Nikki. Welcome to part five of Divers.
Part five.
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. We ended on a wackadoo note.
Did we?
Yes, because, well, the note we ended on was, at least in my memory, was like, ramble, scramble, about bulls, ramble scramble time about bulls, and then us trying to be like, okay, let's end on a different note, and then not really being able to do so, and just like petering out into oblivion.
Okay.
So I feel like that's where we left off, and I feel like there's some redeeming that I want to do, not for us necessarily, but like for this song. Like, I feel like I owe it to Divers to do a bit better.
Okay, but I feel like the rest of the discussion was pretty good, even if we spiraled out about bulls.
Bulls. Yeah, totally agree. I had so much fun last recording.
We hope you guys did too.
We hope you guys did too, of course. And we're back. We have some help too from listeners in this episode.
Oh my God, yes. Thank you for blessing our inbox so much.
Yes, we're super grateful. And like, God, we got some insightful stuff. We got a fucking voice memo, which is just, oh my God, what a godsend. So thank you so much to Sarah, to Cole, to Rebecca, to somewhere out there. And also thanks to Casey, who emailed us this week. But we're going to save your amazing insights for the artwork episode, but it's coming. So don't worry. We haven't forgotten about you, Casey. But for half of the people I mentioned, we're going to talk about them in this episode. And then the other half we're going to cover in a bonus episode on Patreon. So go check that out there.
Yay. Thank you for doing that. I hadn't checked the email in a while because it was kind of crickets. But yay, it was the best gift to see all those. So thanks, guys.
We love it. All right. So do we just hop on into the deep waters of Divers?
Yes. So I have at the top of my notes in all caps, talk about bulls.
Yeah. Let's read the verse.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, so we're zipping back a little bit, right?
Yeah, we're zipping back. We kind of already did this and kind of didn't do it. So we're just going to pretend we said nothing about this verse because it was, and I like edited a bunch of it out to try to just spare people. So yeah, here's the verse. And in an infinite capsize, like a bull tearing down the coast, double hulls bearing double masts, I don't know if you love me most, but you love me last. Okay, that's the verse. This is the verse that almost killed us.
I remember talking about ships, right? We talked about what it means to have a double hull and a double mast.
We did.
We talked about what the coast might means in what might mean in terms of divers and sailors and women on the pier, that like in between division line between the land and the sea.
Yes.
I think we also talked about what it means to be loved last.
If we did, I don't remember that part, but it doesn't mean that we didn't talk.
I just assumed that we did, but maybe not.
I think we just abandoned ship. We started talking about ships. We talked about like the insulated ship part. Yep.
So it doesn't spill oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think we were just like, fuck this shit. We tried to get into bulls and then couldn't do it.
So the article that got us into bulls was one that you found, that I found increasingly difficult to read as I worked my way through it. So I think it's a Feeding Curiosity article called Archetypes the Bull. It's, I sat down last night and maybe my brain was just tired, but I just had such a hard time following it.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I pulled from it was literally sacrifice, blood. The bull is a sacrificial offering, symbol of fertility, an adversary to spiritual growth. And then they also talked about this awful thing. Nikki has a ton of research about bulls, but they also mentioned this thing that I don't think I've ever seen, maybe once in a movie, and I can't, I'm sure one of you can tell me what movie it's in, but I know exactly you're making the face. The sphragmos, which is, we should have done a trigger warning for that too, which is like the pulling apart of someone, tearing to pieces of someone.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But what has that, what does that have to do with bulls?
It was people in do this that article. Hold on, let me search it. In Greek myth, Agave, queen of the Moenads in worship of Dionysus, is worked into an ecstatic ritual bloodlust known as sphragmos. Oh, therein, gross. The body of the god or a human or animal substitute is torn to pieces, which are eaten or scattered like seed.
Okay. All right. So we're getting violent real quick.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
That's what I pulled from that article.
Yeah, right.
And then I was like, and then my next note is I didn't really understand the rest of this article.
Yeah, it was a very dense article. So let's take a step back, or maybe a step away, a step to the side and around the article.
Yeah, we're going to just put it over here.
Exactly. Leave it there. Revisit it never. So one thing that I was just thinking when I was just like looking at the verse, trying to like gain my bearing a little bit, was I somehow didn't catch this before, but like the double hulls on the boat, I think are being compared to the bull horns. So like, or sorry, not double hulls, double masts are being compared to the bull horns, I think. So like the two masts of a ship.
Sure.
And I just didn't see, I didn't have that visual in my head before, but I thought that was maybe worth mentioning.
And it's right there, right? Like a bull tearing down the coast, double hulls bearing double masts.
Right.
So like, yeah. Yes, that image of what? Of like strength and speed and like.
Yes.
Something.
And something, yeah. That's okay. We don't even need to identify the something, but
yeah.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I saw too on Blessing All the Birds, I don't remember if this was a Rachel Parent or a Melissa Martiriano article. I think it was Rachel Parent. She had compared Occident, did like a comparison of Occident and divers. Maybe it's Melissa, I don't know. And one of the two of them had said that in Occident, the boat coming, I think it's a single-masted boat in Occident that's coming towards the narrator, represents death and like the narrator being afraid of sort of the impending death in the background. And they had said in the article, in divers, we get this too, but instead of just death, there's this duality that we get that is such a central theme on divers, where it's not a single-masted boat representing just death, but it's double-masted. So this thing is both life and death, sort of in that same, in the same entity.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I love given the themes of divers more generally, this duality.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes me feel better about it too. That it's not just death bearing down on us. That there's some balance to that.
Yeah, and it's infinitely capsizing. So it's just capsizing over and over and over again. Maybe in the way that life and death just happen over and over again. Like it's just these endless cycles, and maybe that's what the boat's doing. Not sure. Okay.
Yeah, an infinite capsize is like a downward motion to you, right? So like you're always moving. I don't know. Does that mean that it starts again?
Well, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but again, I don't know if I cut it or not. But there's the question of whether it's going down and down and down forever, or just like capsizing and then coming up and then capsizing and then coming up, like just spinning kind of? Sure.
Nope. To turn over, to become upset and overturned. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. There's that. How about before I get into my bull wormhole, you read that excellent email by, who was it now?
Rebecca.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rebecca. This is really cool.
So, yep. Thank you, Rebecca. So this is what she said. I always interpreted the bull tearing down the coast to be a play on the idiom a bull in a china shop. This figure of speech can be interpreted in a few ways. One, as careless inconsideration, and one as more of unintentionally destructive. Both interpretations involve recklessness and damage. My family has had three bully breed dogs who we often refer to in the latter way, since they can love you a little too hard, like push you over while trying to give you a kiss, or accidentally break lamps with their muscly bodies while getting the zoomies. If we see the seafaring men, divers and the sailors, remembering that many divers die from boats, as bulls in a china shop, we can see both interpretations as applicable. Throughout Newsom's corpus, male romantic partners have shown inconsideration, but we also must remember that the divers are not to blame for their rift spanning distant shores. So the damage being done could also be unintentional. Perhaps the coast represents the relationship, as the coast is that liminal space where the water meets the land, and the divers and sailors can meet the women on the pier. If the ship is a bull tearing down the coast like a bull in a china shop, it may be causing damage to the relationship and or coast, whether intentionally or not. This interpretation might be a stretch, since the phrases a bull tearing down the coast and a bull in a china shop have only two words in common, but since Newsom has a well-documented history of manipulating idioms for her own use, my favorite being their applause caused the kettle black, I think it could be a potential explanation for the specific use of the bull.
I love it.
I love it. I love especially this duality of careless inconsideration versus unintentionally destructive, especially in terms of all the pearl stuff we've talked about. So we're coming up to a verse, one of my favorite of all of hers, with the shucking. And that is an incredible place to think about intentional destruction or careless inconsideration or unintentional destruction.
Yeah, I love that too. I also really loved the thought that like the coast could represent the relationship, as it's this like in between place from the shore and the sea, from the land and the sea. Yeah, super cool. And yes, and the next verse is so fucking good.
Oh my
this
god!
Is, like, I can't wait. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you so much, Rebecca. I love that. Even if there's only two words in common, it's still the idea of, like, just the thought in general of a bull fucking stampeding anywhere is scary. I don't know if a single animal can stampede, but, like, tearing down the coast, there is some sort of inherent destructiveness that has. Bulls are not delicate animals, and so this idea of something tearing down the coast on the loose totally brings to that kind of destruction to my mind as well.
As you said, bulls are not like gentle, like
delicate
animals. Do you know the story of Ferdinand, the children's book?
I think you talked about this last time. Who is a nice bull? Yeah, I think so, because I hadn't heard of it. But
he just doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to go fight the matadors.
You did. David did. But I'm pretty sure it was you.
I bet you David knows it too.
But he just wanted to be gentle.
He just wanted to pick flowers and like nap in the grass.
So sweet.
Yeah. A lovely story.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for that, Rebecca. We love that. Any other thoughts on bull stuff? I could not stop reading about bulls. And there's, again, so many different wormholes to go down. So I'm just going to summarize some of the main stuff that I found.
Okay.
But just with the caveat that, like, if you want to do deep dives into any of this, there are deep dives that are available to be done. So, like, people just flag for yourself if you are interested in any of these things, because it's all fucking fascinating. Okay, so the main takeaway for me, just before I get into, like, super, like, the details of different cultures' representations of bulls, is that bulls are just a hugely symbolic, important, oftentimes sacred animal across cultures. Like, this is just, for some reason, a symbol that has persisted for thousands of years, and it is not relegated to one specific area. Like, all over the world, people place significance on bulls, and have for forever. Okay. So that fact alone sort of makes me think that, like, I don't know, there's some sort of universality statement being made, maybe, by Joanna. Like, some sort of, like, this animal, maybe we get the image of, like, this animal, like, tearing across the times, across geography, like, literally running across.
Experience.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just being this something that endures, right? Something that endures across time. Yeah. So again, as with, like, all of these thoughts and theories, like, I can't connect that exactly in more explicit detail, that thought exactly in more explicit detail, but, like, it's a theme. There's a theme in the album, and there's maybe a tie-in to the bull, and that's as much as I'm going to do for this little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have here from various Wikipedia entries. So cattle are prominent in some religions and mythologies. As such, numerous peoples throughout the world have at one point in time honored bulls as sacred. So in the old Babylonian epic of Gilgamesh, the goddess Ishtar sends Taurus, the bull of heaven, and the bull of heaven is, like, a really a big theme throughout the stuff that I researched. So Taurus is the bull of heaven. The goddess sends the bull of heaven to kill Gilgamesh for spurning her advances. So Gilgamesh rejected this goddess, and the goddess was like, fuck you, I'm going to send this bull to kill you.
Okay.
Gilgamesh's friend kills the bull instead and tears off its limbs and hurls it into the sky, where it becomes the stars that we know as Ursa Major and Ursa Minor, as a little tie-in to Bear.
We have talked about this before. I wonder if this is an alternative. Okay, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, explanation. Because we talked about how Ursa Major and Ursa Minor were from the bear myth, where, like, I think Zeus, like, assaults Calliope or something.
Yes, that's and what then, I remember.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know if this is in conflict with that, or, like, in conjunction, or just another myth altogether. Mm-hmm. I don't have a good enough understanding of the way the world works, or myths in general.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, exactly. Okay, so that's one thing that I found. But anyways, like, the constellation Taurus is really old. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I've never known how to pronounce that, by the way. Taurus. But anyways, yeah. So Taurus is the bull, and it's the bull of heaven, and it's prominent again throughout all these different cultures and mythologies. So in early Mesopotamian art, the bull of heaven, or Taurus, was closely associated with the goddess of sexual love, fertility, and warfare, okay. Which, again, of course, I'm going to think is interesting, because warfare, love, and fertility are all big themes on the album, I think. I don't know how much fertility is, but probably it's probably there. To the Egyptians, the constellation Taurus was a sacred bull that was associated with the renewal of life in spring. So I saw this in several places, that Taurus was associated with spring. I mean, that's where it is in, like, the zodiac calendar, but also it just sort of foretells the arrival of spring, where it appears in the sky. So, like, renewal and, like, rebirth, which I'm... And remember in our list, we had, like, seasons, songs as seasons is sure one of do. The... Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's that.
We also have disembodied hands, which seems surprisingly appropriate with all the throwing of bull body parts into the sky.
Into the sky. Yes. And I was thinking, too, maybe, like, this weird connection between like the sky and the water. Like we talked about how Gianna said before that she's obsessed with like the division, mm-hmm. the line that divides like the sea and the sky and the earth and the sky. And like there's this like weird crossing of boundaries there mm-hmm. in this particular myth. Okay. Also, one of the things that you said you pulled from that sprawling article was that bulls represent sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that comes up in a lot of the myths throughout different cultures. And so sometimes like emperors would order the sacrifice of bulls in order to like honor either themselves or like various gods. But oftentimes that sacrifice would happen in spring or as spring began, and it would, at least for the sake of the myth, it would lead to the renewal of the land, which right. again ties into...
Which that article was talking about, like the blood, the body of the god or human or animals torn to pieces, which are eaten or scattered like seed. So there's like this link between the sacrifice and its body into the soil and the renewing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so in the theme of like, if we're comparing the bull to the boat, which is also being compared to like life and death, it's like, and like a cycle too with like the infinite capsize, there's just like this theme of like mortality / immortality, like that duality, rebirth and death and all sorts of cyclical life, existential big themes.
Yeah.
Okay, so to the early Hebrews, Taurus was the first constellation in their zodiac and consequently was represented by the first letter in their alphabet, Aleph. So their first letter is the symbol of Taurus, which I didn't know.
Mm.
In Greek mythology, Taurus was identified with Zeus, who assumed the form of a magnificent white bull in order to abduct Europa, a legendary Phoenician princess. I do feel like we've talked about this too at some yeah. point. In illustrations of Greek mythology, only the front portion of this constellation is depicted. This was sometimes explained as Taurus being partly submerged as he carried Europa out to sea. So I included that part because I thought it was cool to have, again, like this merging of the land or of the sea and the sky with like Zeus being like belonging to the sky and sort of Taurus, the constellation belonging to the sky, but him being partially submerged in the water at the same time. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
No, I like that.
Okay, so some Greek mythographer, which I didn't know was a thing, but this guy or this person, Acusilaus, marks the bull Taurus as the same that formed the myth of the Cretan bull, one of the 12 labors of Heracles. So, of course, I'm like, well, what the fuck is what are the labors of Heracles?
Yes. Well, that's what happens when you go down these holes, right?
Exactly. Especially yeah. with myths. Shit gets insane yes. real fast. All right, so just very briefly, the Cretan bull, one of the tasks that Hercules or Heracles had to do was that he was sent to capture a bull. This bull had been wreaking havoc on Crete by uprooting crops and leveling orchard walls. Mm-hmm. So again, we have like the uprooting of crops sort of theme. All right, Heracles captured the bull and then shipped him away. The bull later broke loose and wandered into Marathon, becoming known as the Marathonian bull. And so we have like a running bull, maybe. Yep. Marathon being associated with running, obviously. Okay, just three more things. So Taurus also became an important object of worship among the Druids, who we've also talked about before. Their Tauric religious festival was held while the sun passed through the constellation. Okay, among the Arctic people known as the Inuit, the constellation is called Sakitiat. And then in Buddhism, legends hold that Buddha was born when the full moon was in Taurus. Okay, that's my bull stuff.
Okay. It's fantastic. So what I've learned is that we have this image of the bull as representing both in the ship and like in action in these myths as this like duality between life and death and like fertility and prosperity, but then also like death and destruction and violence.
Yeah.
That there's this universality to the bull, that it's like represented in so many different cultures around the world.
Yeah, exactly that. And I also in particular am curious too about the notion of it representing sacrifice, not just as it connects to violence and death, but like mm-hmm. obviously, yes, that too. But sacrifice in terms of like what we might be sacrificing for what. So we talked last time or the time before about like the pearl diver sacrificing a bunch of time mm-hmm. With the narrator for the purpose of retrieving these pearls, and like the narrator sacrificing time with her loved one, sort of relegated to the coast. So I don't know, just the notion of like what we give up for what exactly. And even in the context of like a relationship too, like what do we sacrifice in order to be on that relationship? The narrator sacrifices, like, you know, when she says that the jewel would cost her less than laying at low tide, like there's a sacrifice being made there. So I was curious about that as being a potential theme here that I had maybe missed before.
As you were talking about Gilgamesh, and this is not very active listening, so please excuse me, but I was scrolling the Wikipedia, and Gilgamesh goes on to find the eternal secret, the secret of eternal life, which is, quote, life which you look for, you will never find. For when the gods created man, they let death be his share and life withheld in their own hands. Which I think just like beautifully ties into all of this, like two-sided life, death, beautiful, awfulness.
Oh, interesting. So help me understand the phrasing of this. So Gilgamesh finds like the secret of eternal life or whatever. And the secret of eternal life is that you're gonna die. What is it like?
Yeah, I think it's that balance between, so he says, they say life which you look for you will never find. So that's the first part.
Okay.
And I think that could probably mean a bunch of different things, but to me I think that's like there is no like clearly defined meaning of life for everyone. And then the second part is, for when the gods created man, they let death be his share and life withheld in their own hands. So that like you, to me, that is like, you don't have the power to choose life or death. When the gods created man, they let death be his share. So man has more of a share in death than he does in life.
Yeah.
And life is held in the hands of gods.
So this piques my interest a lot because, well, I don't know. I was thinking of waiting till the next verse to bring this up, but I've been reading, I'm only like halfway through, but I've been reading The Pearl by John Steinbeck.
Good for you. Remember? Yeah. I remember you bringing that up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the themes of the book, so far at least, has been sort of this like paradox of like, I was thinking about maybe doing a book club Patreon thing for this, but I think that maybe I'll save the first book club for The Wasteland, because you guys, I've been listening to like literal like hours and hours and hours and hours of Wasteland analysis trying to get Joanna Newsom themes, but also just trying to understand the fucking poem in the first place. And it is fascinating. So check our Patreon out for that soon, even though I have to somehow compile my thoughts into one coherent episode, but we'll figure it out. Coherent-ish, exactly. So anyways, I was going to save this to the next verse because there's pearl stuff in it, but just on the theme of paradoxes right now, so that Gilgamesh has the secret of life, and the secret of life is like death is right there. And like whatever, man is born with his fair share of death, the right in hand. And the idea that that you can't be looking for happiness or you're not going to get it. Was that the first part of it? It was like, you can't be looking for...
Life, which you look for, you will never find.
You will never find. So yeah, maybe that was just me inserting my... just like stuff that I talk about in philosophy sometimes, but like the thought that like, if you're trying to live a happy life, then you're going to be like so concerned with like, ooh, is this the happiest that I could be at all moments? Oh, am I doing the best option? Like just constantly second guessing yourself and thinking about it too much rather than being in the moment and enjoying it and not thinking about whether you're maximizing happiness.
Yeah.
And so there's like a paradox there, right? There's like a paradox in that there's like, there's tension between wanting to live the best life and having to forget about the fact that you want to live a best life in order to actually do so. And I get a similar vibe here. Like Gilgamesh has to sort of forget that he's going to die or like that you need to be looking out for the meaning of life in order to actually find the meaning of life, which is not, I don't know, something like that. Some sort of paradoxical theme.
And I think we've talked about this, if not directly, then very indirectly throughout our discussion of this whole album, because I think so much of her lyrics on this album are about those small happinesses, those small bits of pleasure, right? We've talked about relationships, we've talked about love, we've talked about friends, and capital T time. So for me, I think so much of Gilgamesh's secret here is like, forget about time,
yeah,
forget about death, like do what you can. And yeah, that's probably just like a too basic reading of this like epic,
yeah,
epic Gilgamesh experience, but that's what I get right now.
Yeah, and like I feel like skipping forward to the time as a symptom, I feel like that is a little bit of the message that we're left with, which is like joy of life. Like that's what it's about. And so like this constant questioning and this constant fretting about death, like the best that that can give us is to remember to just enjoy it. Like, or something. I don't, that's probably too simplistic too, but you can feel that kind of push and pull, that kind of tension and paradox vibe here.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel better about the bull talk than I did last episode, let me tell you.
I'm glad that feel great that was about a satisfying it. Endeavor.
Yeah.
we'll never know.
Satisfying-ish. And exactly. We never know. This is as good as we're going to do. What do we think about the last line? I don't know if you love me most, but you love me last.
Great question, Nikki.
Thank you.
I don't know if you loved me most, but you loved me last. I don't know. I think my interpretation right now is just very literal. Like, but what does that have to do with the rest of the verse?
Right.
Like, if something is ending, so we're talking about infinite capsizing, we're talking about a bull tearing down the coast, and Rebecca had mentioned, like, the coast as a relationship. If it's either life ending or relationship ending, I think it's just a very honest statement. We were together last, and I don't know where we stand, where I stand in, like, I don't want to say rankings of love, because I don't think I mean that in terms of like people that our sailor has loved.
Because David brought me a sandwich and now my cat is trying with all of her might to eat the sandwich before I do, and it's just
Nikki
sitting
just
here.
Like picked her up upside down. And so
I like the idea of it just being literal, because I totally feel like that vibe is there too. Like, just we've had a bunch of relationships throughout our life, and like you don't need to rank the person, but maybe just the importance of the relationship to you.
And like, I feel like last is just in time. Like, right, before this happened, I was the last one in line.
Right.
I don't know. What does genius say? What do you think?
Well, because remember we had talked too about like the potential that the narrator of this song is close to death or has died or something like that, where she's like talking about like how would you know that this is your last love, or how would you know that what were the other questions here, that I loved you best, like someone, it feels like someone's dying, whether it be the narrator or the partner. And so so I like that idea that like it was the last one, as in the last one chronologically that like you got to enjoy. But also I like the idea too of it being maybe yes, chronological in that same way, but instead of within one life, like across lives. So like if we're talking about like reincarnation or like the cyclical nature of things, or like death not really being the end, I like the idea that then this is maybe far-fetched, but that the narrator could be sort of transcending her, who she is right now, that there could be a me that persists across different lives. And so she's like, I don't know if you love me most, but you loved me. Like, this was the last relationship. Again, this was the last relationship that I had. And I don't know if it was the best one that I've ever had, but like, it's the closest one to where we are right now. I don't know.
And also just not knowing, like, if you are dying, who are you thinking about? Are you thinking of the person you loved last? Are you thinking of the person you loved most? Are you thinking of like the experiences you loved most, or the places, or?
Right. And it also seems like a very non-romantic, like, but in a way that I like, this very grounded way of putting it. Like, this whole song is about how like she would give everything to like be with her love, or like it costs her everything to be without him at least. And like, there's this like, I don't know, like this intense dynamic between the partner and the diver. And she's like admitting that, like, I don't even know if this is like the most love, that it's still important. Like, that it's love is what it's important, not whether it's the most or the best or like the, you know, it's grounded in this refreshing kind of way.
It is. It's very honest.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know. How often do we get an I don't know in this music? It's, I feel like it's rare and it's a treat. I'm going to hold on to that I don't know, because I also don't know.
We're with you, Joanna.
I also don't know.
Yeah. You asked what Genius says about this. So Genius says some stuff. This person also thinks that it sounds like she's singing to someone who has died. They also write, it could also be read as the narrator addressing someone who she knows she will be with until the end of her life, or that she will take no other lover after he has died. They say this idea of a final love is also visited on only skin. So, and when the fire moves away, son, why would you say I was the last one? The subtext of these lines on Only Skin is that the narrator is almost angry at her lover for saying that she is the last person he'll ever love, because he knows he's about to die. She is angry because she wants him to fight to stay alive, even if that means he'll love someone after her. Here in Divers, it's an entirely different sentiment. The narrator is fatefully declaring that the diver will be her final lover. Interesting.
So there's some kind of finality there.
Some kind of finality, some kind of grappling with fate, whether it be like because death has already come for one of them, whether it be because the narrator is a super narrator and knows what's about to happen. Who knows? Whether it be like a declaration of devotion, like, you will be my last because I'll love you forever. Who knows?
Or is it like, you will be my last because swoop, I'm getting sucked into another dimension here.
Right. Like. Swooping could be happening. We don't know. Yeah. All right. That's all I have for this godforsaken verse.
Poor verse. It's not your fault.
No, it's not the verse's fault. I think it's a beautiful verse. It's just deciphering it is a challenge for me.
Yeah.
Any thoughts you guys have on it? We are delighted to share your voice memos or your thoughts about this verse in particular, but also about everything, anything.
Before we get to the next one, I forget what I was looking for art for the Instagram for last week's episode, and I ended up looking at diving bells and then was like, Nikki, why haven't we talked about diving bells? Like, I don't know what time this song is set in, but it feels like maybe that could be something cool.
Yeah. So can you help me remember what diving bells are?
I can read you the Wikipedia. So Wikipedia for diving bells says, a diving bell is a rigid chamber used to transport divers from surface to depth and back in open water, usually for the purpose of performing underwater work. The most common types are the open-bottomed wet bell and the closed bell, which can maintain an internal pressure greater than the external ambient. Diving bells are usually suspended by a cable and lifted and lowered by a winch from a surface platform. The wet bell is a structure with an airtight chamber, which is open to the water at the bottom, that is lowered underwater to operate as a base or a means of transport for a small number of divers. Air is trapped inside the bell by pressure of water at the surface. So this was the first kind of diving chamber that was used for people to go real deep without needing to hold their breath for so long.
Gotcha.
Which is why I thought it was interesting, because we talked about earlier in the song, holding your breath for an extended period of time. And yeah. I especially was very stuck on who takes one breath above for every hour below the sea. I was like, how? Yeah. How? What is happening? How does that make sense? And I think if we maybe think about a diving bell, it might make sense.
Yes. And then we get another symbol of death right there.
Yes.
In the form of a bell.
Yeah.
And some, like, you know, sawdust and diamondsy vibes.
Which I always love.
We're always here for.
I don't honestly have a lot more to say about it other than that. I was just like, oh, yeah, this is another thing that maybe was used. But if it's, maybe I'm taking it back. It doesn't really make sense in terms of like oyster finding or pearl diving, right? Because you, unless you can lower the bell and you can come in and out of it.
Yeah, I wonder if that's possible. Or, like, what if you lower it all the way to the ground and then you can, like, touch the ground where there's oysters all within your little diving bell?
Yeah.
Who knows? I like it, though.
It's a cool image anyway. Yeah,
it is a cool image. Thank you guys for listening to part 5 of our discussion on divers. We are having a great time.
A great and awful time.
A great and awful time doing this. And we hope you guys are maybe in the same boat as us. We have a Patreon you should check out. There we have early episode releases. We also have a bunch of bonus episodes. I think I said this already, but soon there's going to be a little book club on The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot. But we have listener theories that we talk about there. We have like really silly bonus episodes. I recently organized them all into like a little folder of bonus episodes so that you don't have to sift through all of the early releases in order to find them.
Very thoughtful.
Thank you. So yeah, go check us out on Patreon. I will link to it in the show notes. Email us, like the amazing listeners who did that this week, who we're so grateful to.
Sarah, Cole, Rebecca, Casey. Casey will touch back on you when we do album art and also Somewhere Out There. Thank you so, so much. You made our week with all your incredible thoughts.
You sure did. Our email is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook group, a Hopeless Endeavor Joining Some Podcast. Sam runs our Instagram, which is
A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. You can send me DMs there. There's also a link tree to all of the intro and outro beats that are lovingly crafted by David, our Patreon, and all that good stuff.
All that jazz. So check us out on all those things. You can rate and review us if you want to.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And see you for part 6 next week. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Part 6 is probably up right now on Patreon, so go check it out again. Okay, bye.